It's Great Mondays Radio. I'm Josh Levine, your host, founder of Great Mondays. We help executives from hypergrowth technology and social enterprise organizations build cultures that attract, engage, and retain top talent. If you'd like to be a guest on our program, hang out for about 20 minutes and I'll tell you how. Hey, 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 everybody. It is Great Mondays Radio. One of the biggest challenges we have and one of the elements of working well, being an effective human at work, is persuasion. And today I have an expert in storytelling. And I would argue that means he's an expert in persuasion. Corey Rosen, his new book is called A Story for Everything, How to Apply Storytelling Tools and Frameworks for All Manner of Communication in Work, School, and Personal Life. So Corey's going to teach us how to be better at telling stories so that we can get people to understand what we're trying to communicate. Corey Rosen, welcome back to Great Mondays Radio. My first second time guest.
You're my first second time guest. That is a huge honor. It is nice to be your first second. Thank you. Wow. I mean, maybe to be your second first would have been nice if I was your second first. Somebody else has that title.
Second only to second first.
But first, second, honored to be back on Great Mondays. My favorite book, my favorite podcast host. And so excited to just tell a couple of stories, talk about storytelling and how it connects to culture and companies and persuasion, all the things you just said.
Doing great work. A lot of folks that listen in really believe in their own power to do great work. They're not just showing up. And I have observed through many, many years that we humans will often try to convince somebody at work of something. Mm-hmm. But we are failing. What from your experience as someone who is an author, a storyteller, a consultant that is an expert in this, like why are we failing to convince other people that what we think should be done or a project should be invested in or whatever it might be? Like, why do we fail?
Well, the things that I see and where I see failures happening internal to companies and internal to teams and initiatives and things that people individually want often fail for one or two main reasons. One of them is that people are often sort of defaulting to somebody else's whim, thinking somebody else, they've got the plan. I'm going to go with their plan versus what I think should happen. And so by sitting back and not expressing themselves and not actually sharing that vision leads to, I think, a lot of people feeling distressed and feeling like, well, I wouldn't have done it that way. But they're not actually even expressing themselves because the culture in that company isn't a let's share ideas culture. So that's one aspect of it. But another aspect is sometimes the reasons that things are happening in companies are happening for reasons that the people who made those decisions think are very valid. And the people who have another idea might have a different concept of the why that this should happen. And that's where storytelling is your best tool, because you can say, this is what I want. And you can tell that to someone who's not going to understand or appreciate it because, well, this is how we do things. And this is what is already in place. Mm-hmm. But helping them understand the why is what the power of story is, because story has the power to not just tell you what you want, but to create essentially a universe, create a vision of what that is, and get to the heart, the meaning, the purpose behind it. I'll give you an example. An old friend of mine, childhood friend of mine, we went to summer camp together when we were 9 years old. Then later in life, we went to college together, and now she is a second grade teacher in New Jersey. I live in San Francisco. And she read my first book, Your Story Well Told, which is all about telling stories, developing ideas for stories, crafting and telling stories. And something that a lot of people said when they read my book is like, well, this seems like a good book for people that want to get on stages and tell stories, but I want to try using this in my regular life. And so what she did was this. This was just kind of during/post-pandemic. And during the pandemic, her school had implemented a new policy at the school, which was to remove the pets in classrooms program. Like, there was a situation that in elementary schools, a lot of times they'll let you have a pet in the classroom that is kind of like the class pet. And there's responsibilities that the kids can do, and they can feed the pet and they can play with the pet. And then, you know, periodically the kids get to take the, in this case, a chinchilla, take the chinchilla home with them. And it was a really popular program, but the school had decided during the pandemic, we're canceling that program, no more pets. And rather than just complaining and saying, oh, but I really like that program, Diane wrote a story. And she wrote in the story in an email to the principal of the school explaining about how this program has really impacted her students. And in one particular incident, she had a student who was really having trouble focusing and concentrating, except when he had that chinchilla in the pouch of his hoodie. So he would sit in class and he would have his hand inside and he would be just petting and stroking and loving on that chinchilla. And during that time, it was a comfort animal. It was a safe space for this kid. And that kid was focused on the classwork. He was engaged in the school. And because of that, she said, please reconsider, considering that it's no additional cost to the school. You know, generally I pay and other teachers pay out of themselves. The cleanup is all something that the kids are involved in, and the educational aspect is really powerful. Well, this one letter that she wrote got exactly the response that she wanted. And this is a true story, where the teacher wrote back, said, thank you so much for sharing that story, because it was about a specific incident, a kid, and impact that that pet had. And because of that, that policy was revoked. We will consider pets again. We will not make that a blanket policy in the school. So when we can think about the what we want, change that we might want to implement, if you can find a way to tell a story around it, here's an example of why this would work. Here's an example of how it has worked. Here's an example of something that is about what stories do, which is about change. You too can find these kind of results.
So normally, I think in business contexts, if we were to tell that story, we would say, look, this is a great program. It doesn't cost you any extra money. The kids clean up and it helps improve engagement. There's no reason you shouldn't continue the program. That is usually how we tell that story in business. I'm going to tell you about the data. I might even say, right, it costs you $0 and the cleanup is something that we all spend 15 minutes on and you don't have any problems. And engagement is up 32%.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And then you're like,
so there's data to back it up.
Yeah.
And there's also, I think the pivot there too is a little bit of the why, a little bit of the heart. If it's just the data, then we understand that cognitively. But I think when you hit you both ways, it's the 1-2 punch that can actually make a little bit more connection as a person.
My point is, in business, we'll put up a slide with just those three numbers and say, ta-da, and then expect it to work. Where we need to become better stewards of our own ideas or our own opinions is to be able to tell a story that illuminates or sets or softens the target up and say, you know, it's like, here's, and it doesn't cost anyone. It's like that becomes because even the most stalwart CFO is a human. Right.
Yeah.
Until further notice. Right. And humans respond to stories in a really powerful way. So tell me. All right. So let's talk about what makes for a good story, because in your book, you actually organize it into three parts. You had telling great stories for business, great stories for school, and great stories for your family.
Yeah.
Or for families. Right. So when we're thinking about kind of a rubric for understanding what makes for a good story, how do I tell a good story?
So I think a tool that anyone can apply right away to any story that they're telling, regardless of the context, is to understand that stories ultimately are about three different buckets, and that in sometimes equal parts, not always equal parts, but at least present parts, we need each of these buckets to show up in the stories that we tell. So the first bucket is going to seem obvious. It's just what happens in the story. What is the central action or anecdote of the story? Like, what is the thing that happened? Mm-hmm. Is part, I would say, one third of the story. That is not your story. That is part of your story. The second bucket is the description and color, the ways that we illuminate and sort of describe and create an understanding of that story through some specificity, through some details and some examples, things inside of that. So it's not just what happens, but if you're telling me about, you know, the all hands meeting that you attended, and I could picture any number of different ways of picturing an all hands meeting. But if you say, well, it was in a cramped conference room where, you know, all 40 of the employees all squeezed together, you know, elbow to elbow in the little chairs because the boss really wanted to break this news to everyone. So now I have a picture of the context of the situation. So using your senses, using all of your, you know, smell, sight, taste, you know, creating like a visceral experience of that story is bucket number two. And then the third is the emotion, is the why, is the heart of that story. How did it feel being there? How did the character in the story feel? And when you can balance all three of those, what happens, description of it, and then the inner life of that story, then you've got a three-dimensional, an actual complex story. Mm-hmm. So this works in pretty much any context. If you want to make a wedding toast and you're saying, oh, well, I'll just tell the story about the time that, you know, him and I went on vacation to, you know, the Bahamas. Well, you can tell us about what happened, but I'm not going to see it. I'm not going to imagine it, experience it the way that you did. But if you can take me there into the texture and the bikini that he wore at the pool with the big bright, you know, Hawaiian colors and flowers on his Speedo that he was wearing when he got into the hot tub, you know, like give us the visual that we can picture how awkward it was for you at that moment. And then the inner life, how he felt, how you felt, what it was like to be there, and why you realized that this was, you know, a moment that you were always going to remember and that you were going to have to tell at his wedding, you know, whatever that is, getting us into the space that you're not just telling us what happened and you had to be there kind of way, but integrating your listeners together with the experience of it will sync us up. So that works in business and school and in fundraising. There's lots of different examples where you can think about ways to take your messaging and your data points, but to make them human by shaping them in this way.
What about something that hasn't happened yet? I think that we should really do this project or we should invest a sum of money to work on something. And it hasn't existed. I don't have a previous example. Can I do the inverse? Can I say without this program, we're telling this story, it hasn't happened yet. Like, what do I do? Like, how would you approach something that hasn't occurred yet?
Because it happens all the time. Yeah.
Right. With the chinchilla, it happened already. I have an example. I'm convincing you that we need to keep it going. What about something that doesn't exist yet?
Yeah. I love those kind of stories because those are stories where the ending is to be written. So the idea is that we are in this story. And the story that you're telling also makes your listener a participant in that story, because here we are in the story and here's how we got to where we are. And so what the story becomes is it becomes a vision ahead. It becomes a future, a very sort of Nancy Duarte-esque, like projecting out the world that we want to see. And the story ending is to be written, and we can be partners in the telling of that story together by spelling what that vision is.
So give me an example? Like, what would that sound like? Cause I love that idea. I think it sounds exciting. How might that sound if I'm trying to, you know, I have this vision, I have a program, I've worked really hard to build.
Yeah.
Well, isn't that what it's just on paper, right?
Sure. I mean, isn't that what fundraising and grant writing is all about. I mean, when we're creating and crafting any kind of a pitch, any kind of an ask, what we're doing is we're creating a vision of this is the world they want to build. And so what's the once upon a time of that story is who am I and how did I get here? And why am I the right person? Why are we the right team? Why are we the best company to win this award, win this job, win this business, right? Like we all are going after that business all the time. And everybody on paper might look the same. Well, you've done other things and you've got a good track record and you've got a good team. But the story of like how we're going to do it and why us might also have to do with your heart, might have to do with our vision and our belief in this project and our investment in these kind of ideas. Why we don't just want the work. We don't just want the budget. We want to do this because what we are shaping up is to be the company that does this or something that connects the vision of the project together with who we are as a company. So it could look that way where it's like where we are in our crossroads is leading directly to this place because that's this is the step that we want to take. And this is why we're the right partner.
Mm-hmm. So
is that too vague? Is there, do you want something more concrete?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I'd love more. Yeah. I'd love more concrete for sure. Because I'm bought in, right? So what I'm hearing, so correct me if I'm wrong. What I'm hearing is I'm stepping up and I think there's two in my world or my kind of mind, I'm thinking one is I'm convincing, my director that we need to spend this money.
Sure.
Right. So I'm going to come in and say, I'm going to give you my history, like, or like why I'm invested in this. Yeah. But the project where I see that breakdown is or where I don't understand the leap, right, is that this project isn't about me. It's about us or whatever the impact might be.
Right.
So give me something a little more. Take me through that. Why would that work or what's the, you know, what does that feel like?
Sure. First of all, like you mentioned, like going into your director and making a pitch and saying, trying to kind of keep yourself, out of it. It's not about me. It's about this thing. I don't entirely agree with that. I mean, I could see situations where it's not about you, but if it is something that you are interested, invested, and passionate about, I don't think it's that the right answer is always to shy away from that. Like helping your director to understand that you're committed and you're invested and you're kind of passionate about this idea, that you've got a drive to help see this thing through, helps them to, I think, believe in the success of the project because there's a stakeholder who isn't just doing what they think the boss wants, but there's somebody who has a reason for it. And if then there's a way to say like, in a weird way, this reminds me of something that happened at my daughter's soccer game last week. You know,
like, okay. All right.
Pull them out of the project.
Okay.
Take them into your life and your experience and something that you saw, where maybe you saw like a little girl get super sad and a team lose again because they have not won a soccer game all season. They have been playing every Saturday and they get their butts whipped every single week. Time after time after time. And so when I was talking to my daughter, I was like, it's okay, honey, you know, you'll get them next time. And she goes, no, we're not working together. And I was like, working together? Like, that's the problem that I think my team is that we're not getting ahead because maybe we're not working together. Maybe if we worked better together, we could move ahead. I don't know. There's like some way that you could integrate a real thing. I'm not saying make stories up about your kids, but like find something that maybe is a lesson that you've learned at some point in your experience in your life right now or in the past. Mm-hmm. And by sharing a little bit of who you are, it honestly opens up these kind of like neural pathways and neuroscience of really what storytelling does, which is it connects people. It connects understanding you as a parent, you as a person, you as a, as a flawed person, you know, you as somebody struggling with things. And then it's opening up where, how can we now move this together? How can we learn from that experience and try something? With the understanding, like I think we all need to, is that when we try things, we're going to learn as we go in those projects as well. We're going to have to adjust and pivot and adapt. And if we don't, then often those projects, even if they're well-conceived, aren't going to succeed because they're going to need to know how to evolve.
I like what you're saying about, you're doing two things with the personal story, like if you come from the outside. One is you're kind of relating something. Mm-hmm. I had a realization and that was, you know, there's one piece. But your point being that it actually opens up the recipient.
Yeah.
And I know that a good, when I give a talk, I'll start with sort of like the speaker's kind of shortcut is to show a picture of your kids.
Mm.
Everybody loves cute kids, or you can show a picture of your dog, right? Like, and it's like, look, I'm human. And that becomes mm-hmm. part of how you start to connect with your audience. And in this case, your audience might be your director.
Yeah.
And so you're saying, these are the humans. This is how we're kind of becoming more vulnerable
mm-hmm.
in order to tell a more, to represent ourselves as authentic and actually caring about yeah. what the project or thing is.
Yeah. And I'm not saying to do it dishonestly and to do it to be manipulative. If anything, think about it as, I want to connect with this person, this stakeholder, this director, this investor, this executive, you know, this sales target. You know, can I create a connection between them so that I feel listened to, I feel that we are listening to and seeing each other? And then when we go into a project, a line of business together, we feel more aligned. And that's, again, something that I think we like to do when we have trust. And so stories open up that. So whether it's mm-hmm. by showing a picture of your dog or your children or telling a story about something that happened, it does have that impact and that effect. I often do that. I mean, if I'm starting, even if I'm you know, talking with a new client or a consultancy, and I'm talking about doing something, I'll talk about something that just happened, maybe something kind of awkward or an uncomfortable experience that I had. You know, I don't start out with my wins. I'll start out with my humanity. I'll start out by talking about something that did not go so well.
Mm-hmm.
But here I am on the other side of it and excited to be talking to you right now. And in some way, I'm not trying to say, be a, you know, sad sack or, you know, project only defeat, but humanity, being human, I guess is the concept, can make somebody relate and say, oh, you know, actually something like that happened to me too. And now you're having a brief conversation.
Mm-hmm.
I actually just heard a really interesting story about an executive get together where a bunch of, you know, let's say highly programmed and very important people were all getting together, and they had to clear their calendars, and they only had this one moment to all get together and have this meeting. And the sort of fly on the wall who was telling me the story said it was super interesting, because when they got together, they didn't start out with the work that they had to do. They caught up, and it's so good to see you. And they were talking about each other's, you know, kids in college and vacation that they did over the summer and the different things that they were doing. And they had this kind of like shorthand way of just like all connecting with each other. And then when they had done that, then work, and we're done. We've made those decisions and we're out. And everybody felt good and everybody felt done and they moved on. That's what we often remember when we go to conferences, when we go to, you know, professional get-togethers, is the people. And that's what I'm after. Let's do more of that.
Yeah. I think that that's really compelling, because one of the ways that I interpret that interaction, those interactions, is trust building. And I think that's what we're talking about, is we have in business, we have a default of defensive. I'm going to defend my budget, right? Is something you can say. And even with people that you know, right? Like that's why small talk occurs, is because it's all about trust building. And it actually goes back to a mammalian instinct of learning about other people and learning if I can trust them or not. Am I going to get stabbed in the back?
Sure.
Not literally these days, but you know, that was like, can I trust this person to be part of my tribe? And so when you engage with them in a heart-led way, when you're able to be vulnerable, they're almost incapable of not mirroring that emotion.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, mirroring, right. Very, very much so.
So that's,
and
you,
just
that's
to be clear also about the difference between small talk and sort of situational storytelling,
I think
that it's why sort of storytelling is a good muscle to develop for any person, because small talk could just be talking about the game, talking about the weather, talking about something that just happened. Mm-hmm. And a story is different because a story is about something that happened and a learning, a change, something that happened on the other side of that, or a reflection, looking back at that thing. What I'm realizing now is this. And that's a good lead into what we're going to talk about today. You know, like, it can actually have this remarkably crafted way of starting as sort of soft, small, quote unquote, small talk, but actually like segueing directly into what you were here to talk with them about right now. Like, when we can really nuance that and work that muscle of finding a story and finding a way into exactly what you want them to be talking about and thinking about, then how elegant that seems, and how much trust you kind of built. We're both like, wow, you have actually set me up really well for this conversation. So that might be an exercise to do before you go into that conversation with someone, is like, what's something that we might connect over? What's something that I might tell them so that it's not just small talk, but it's effective.
How do I become a better storyteller? What are some tools or exercises that I can practice or prepare with in order to work, as you said, that muscle? Because this is, from your perspective, and I agree as well, like this is something that we can and should use. It actually can deepen and enrich our lives in all aspects. It's just more fun. It's more interesting. It is more meaningful to actually be in the world and connect with other people, not just for influence and persuasion, which is where we started, but just to be able to connect with others. So tell me, how do I work this muscle? You have some tools that you work with your clients with, you have in the book. What's something I can get started with to work the muscle?
Totally. So something that I worked into my toolkit for a long time is play. Like, I think finding ways to play with story, abstract it, not just saying, I need to work on write this important presentation and I need to make a story out of it. That's asking a lot of yourself. I think finding ways to abstract it. I want to tell a 30-second story, you know, and I'm going to do it in the car on my way to work today. I'm going to do it in my voice recorder as I'm walking to catch the bus. You know, finding ways to do that are great ways to kind of work out our brains and work on that. My number one, I probably should have started with this, but my number one thing that I tell people that want to get better at telling stories is listening to stories. The best storytellers are the best story listeners. If you are listening to good stories, whether that's TED Talks, whether that's the Moth Radio Hour, whether that's Snap Judgment, Glenn Washington's amazing podcast. Listening to well-told stories actually comes into your consciousness and you start to see, oh, that's what they are doing. Mm. The skill set that we talked about before about working in not just what happens, but description and emotion, just starting to find an awareness as I'm telling stories to not just say what happens, but to just take a little pause and move to the next little pillar and say, now I'm going to describe it a little bit. And now I'm going to talk about the inner life of that. Mm-hmm. And just moving a little bit cognitively and narratively through that, what you will find is people are going to lean in. They're going to be engaged and interested. You know, it's also sometimes it's a communication. Sometimes people will talk back and it will remind them of something. And then you're doing the real work of storytelling, which is that you're opening up these pathways. And if you're measured about it and you're purposeful about it and you say, well, this is also what I wanted to talk about, and this is why I brought this up, then you may catch them by surprise. You know, you may catch your audience in a way that they didn't quite see it coming. And they're connected to you, they're aligned with what you're saying, and they're willing to give you a shot.
Yeah, I love it. All right, so we're almost at the end. Can you give us one more quick story, case study, or example from the book that you really like, that you think illuminates and kind of can give us, now that we are prepped for a story?
Yeah.
Tell us, you know, now let's listen. Let's practice being good story listeners.
Absolutely. When we go, there's a lot of situations where I'm going to sort of talk a little bit about another situational story time where we are often asked to or sort of required to do certain things that might seem like they're asking a lot of people. So this is this in sort of the school section of my book, I talk about fundraising ask letters.
Yeah.
You know, like we all, you know, everybody that has children or parts of organizations, we need to ask for support. We need your support. We had our funding cut. We had something, some situation where we need your help, your support. And again, we can go to the data. This is what our budget is. This is where we need to make cuts. And we can kind of guilt people a little bit into what they want to do. Or we can look to the why. We can look to the inner life. We can find a specific example of something that happened. This is what the class is working on. This is what I'm doing with my kids. This is why with this amount of, you know, of when we can get to $1,000, we're going to be able to do this. And my kid and your kid, our community is going to be able to move through that. So whether that's in grants or in fundraising, ask letters, these are ways that we're cutting through the what it is that we need. And we're getting to the heart of what that story is. I mean, when we feel we're being manipulated, it can backfire. So be really careful about how we do this. So go with truth, go with something that is true for you, something that you truly believe in, and you can get there.
So tell us one final story. Tell us a story about fundraising.
Okay. So my kids went to San Francisco Public Schools, and growing up every year, there was this situation of my situation was usually asking for, I was the class parent. So I would twice a year at, you know, the holiday season, at the end of the year, I would try to solicit money for this the teacher of the school. And to be honest, a lot of the parents were not very involved. They dropped their kids off or they put their kid on the bus and the kid would come home at the end of the day. They didn't come to the open house. They didn't go to a parent-teacher conference. They just did the minimum and they didn't have a personal connection with that teacher. Since I was in the classroom a little bit more as the class parent, I had a little bit more of a connection with them. And something that I found actually was helpful, was supportive, wasn't specifically about a thing that happened in the classroom, but it was a kind of group think, I guess you would call it, sort of like an understanding that we are a community and there are 26 or however many kids are, 35 families in this classroom, and we are raising money for, you know, Miss W. And this is how to pay me, make it super easy for them. This is how to do it. And I try to be super clear. There's going to be three emails. This is the first of the three emails. Please make a contribution right now. That way I won't have to ask again by the time of the second email, because I've maybe gotten 10 responses from the 35 in there. I will say, this is my second email of three emails. The last time I asked for this and 10 families have participated. Thank you so much. We're up to $126. I would love to get participation. I would love to get just more participation. It doesn't matter the amount of money, but if I can get more families participating, that would really show that we are aligned as a community. And then after that, now the number of families goes up to 20 families out of the 35. So as my final ask, I will say that I was only going to give you three. I'm not overwhelming them with information. It's my third and final ask. We're up to 21 families. So now the 15 who haven't participated, they know, oh shoot, I'm the one who hasn't participated at all. They know, right? And year after year, I would get, I would say never 100%, but like 88 to 90% participation, even if they kicked in $5, $10. But by getting them to realize that we are one thing, we are a limited number of that thing, and I'm the outlier who's not participating, I was able to get really, really high participation in there. And some years the number was really nice, some years the number was just fine. But I always found with that, with by engaging participation, we were going to do better than if I was just going to kind of rely on the three or four, you know, people who will always kick in.
So it's what I hear in that is a social pressure, but it's illuminating the community piece of it. What you're saying is like, I'm going to visualize, right? So just like you were talking about the flower, you know, the floral bikini, you know, in the hot tub, you're saying there are 35 families and right. It's almost like you're embodying that story. You're not just telling that story. You're embodying it. And you're saying, this is our community. This is where we're all trying to do this together. I'm not asking you. I'm asking you to participate. Like I'm asking us. And I think that to me is what feels the most powerful learning from that particular way of storytelling.
Nice. I like that you saw that in there because I think I felt that, but I love the way that you articulated that because it's true. Yeah. It's like any community that we're trying to raise money from and through, we can feel like just these kind of islands, like these disparate islands, but it's like, no, we are one with a cause and our cause is our children's education or our soccer team or the team trip to wherever they want to go to the big tournament. Yeah. So when we are all part of it together, then there's a buy-in, there's a community, there's a trust, and there's a connection that we did something. We all did it. It wasn't just me. It was us.
Yeah. Amazing. Corey Rosen, author of A Story for Everything, people will forget facts and figures, but will never forget a good story. His book is out now. He's the founder of Your Story Well Told. Author, of course, storyteller, of course, consultant, of course. He's doing amazing work helping people really get their ideas out into the world, regardless of business school or family. So great to have you on, Corey. Great to see you. Thank you so much for coming on. I'm going to take this forward and really think about, I've got some events coming up, and I'm going to think about how I'm going to engage my audience with even better storytelling. So thank you for this. Corey Rosen, really appreciate you being on, coming on Great Mondays Radio.
Love it. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Great Mondays Radio. Hey, if you want to be a guest, head over to radio.greatmondays.com. And if you think this episode was interesting and your friends and fans would enjoy it, please share on social media. And if you want to get more people to understand the power of company culture in business today, please rate and review Great Mondays Radio on your podcast feed. It really helps us reach more people. If you want to hear more candid conversations with culture leaders, subscribe to Great Mondays Radio. I'd love to connect with you. Find me on LinkedIn at AKA Josh Levine, on YouTube at Great Mondays. And you can always email me, josh@greatmondays.com. Find out more about our work with hypergrowth technology and social enterprise organizations at greatmondays.com. I'm Josh Levine. Thanks for listening to Great Mondays Radio.